You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Spring will be here soon, so if buying a new home is on your to-do list, right now is the time to call Quicken Loans. Learn about which mortgage options make sense for you and get a jump on your competition. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed-rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for the new Sesame Ginger Glazed Chicken Signature Wrap. How would you like it?
I'll take a...
Sports announcer at home?
Yeah, how'd you...
We just know.
My wife picks up the new Signature Wrap. It's got double the rotisserie-style chicken mixed with a sesame ginger glaze. She appears annoyed at me, but she shrugs it off. Those sweet and savory flavors are calling her name. She lifts the wrap and... She takes the bite! Incredible! And now she's closing the door on my... Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Double meat basement, average 6-inch sub.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
tip pour me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
It's time now for the Conservative Curmudgeon Radio Show. Now, here's Grouchy.
Good evening. Welcome in. Great to be back with you. It is Wednesday night on KLRN Radio, your home for conservative grassroots talk radio. Before we get rolling tonight, need to give you your programming updates. Following me immediately at the top of the next hour will be the Red Wine with their guest couch. I don't know who's going to be on it, so you should stay tuned to find out, because it's bound to be fun. After that, the lovely and talented Leslie Dowd will be filling in for the R&W show, so it will be the R&L show, and then you will get Rick by himself with America Off the Rails for your nightcap. As I said, it is KLRN Radio, your grand slam of conservative talk tonight. I see the chat room is starting to fill in. That is great. We all know it's Wednesday night. Chat lives do matter. At least some. I'm sure you guys will show up, though. Anyway, we got a lot of talking to do tonight. I have more show notes than we'll ever have time to get to, as usual. you guys don't. It takes me about... just so you'll understand, it takes me about 15 pages of notes to put a one-hour show together. Somewhere between 12 and 15, depending on how far off topic we get going and things of that nature. I'm sitting on 26 pages of notes tonight. I know we'll never get to it all, and I don't know why I put myself through this doing this, because then we get crap blowing up today, like with Trump and the Kurds and Turkey and northern Syria, and you know, we're going to touch on it. I don't know how much time we're going to spend on it. We will get to it. Let's just put it that way. It is the plan. It was not written in to be a primary part of the show, and I want to stick with what I've prepped. I've always kind of prided myself on trying to ignore the bigger stories unless I get first crack at it. And I guess technically I would have first crack at this. So we're going to touch on it. Let's just say that. And then you're going to get later tonight with Rick, you're going to get a whole lot more. So I'm only going to touch on it. I'm going to get your whistle wet, and then I'm going to let Rick satiate you with it later. All right. So here we go. A new report shows, and again, this was not covered in the mainstream media, so you may not have heard this, but a new report is showing that median household income has climbed 3% since Donald Trump took office. This is another of the many, many signs of a strong economy. And there is at least one poll that shows that the public credits Trump for the good news. Now, with that said, and with everything else that's going on, should Democrats wave bye-bye to what they called the blue wave, more like the blue high tide? I mean, if we continue at this pace, if we're looking at 4.5-5% increase in household income this time next year, when we're looking at an election cycle, does America really vote Trump out of office? Now, look, median household income has been steadily increasing under Trump, not increasing under Trump. Okay, so when Trump took office, it was 59,471. let's see. And it's risen to 61,483. And that's according to the Centier Research Center, who tracks income on a monthly basis using census data. Now, this also means that the median household income is now higher than it's been in the last 50 years after adjusting for inflation. This is a sharp turnaround from the Obama years. Centier data show that median household income was the same when President Obama left office as when he arrived in office. Under Obama, household incomes continued to fall steeply for two full years after the recession officially ended, and then took 4 years to make up the lost ground that it fell in the 2 years. Incomes then flatlined again, posting no overall gain between August of 2015 and December of 2016. So Democrats still trying to take credit for the current economy need to go pound sand. But this is just another indication that the economy has notably strengthened under Trump. And polls show that the public realize that, and their mood has brightened considerably as a result. The latest IBD TIP Economic Optimism Index is 53.6. this index has been in positive territory, which, again, for those that are not deep thinkers, is anything over 50% since Trump took office. The quality of life index, meanwhile, hit a 14-year high in May, and the financial stress index is at an all-time low. Gallup's tracking poll shows that 67% now say it's a good time to find a quality job in the United States, which is the highest Gallup started asking this, or from when Gallup started asking this question 17 years ago. The best measure ever received under Obama for the same question was 45%. That was his best. Even a CNN poll finds that 57% now say that things are going well in the United States, up from 49% in February. A CBS News YouGov poll found that 64% thought the economy was either somewhat or very good. So I ask again, what do Democrats have to offer that's going to be better than the best we've ever seen? And if they had that, why didn't they unroll it in the 8 years prior to Trump coming to office? But what must be of real concern to the Democrats is that 68% of the public now says that Trump's policies deserve at least most of the credit, according to a CBS poll. 35% say he deserves all the credit, while only 11% say he deserves none at all. I'd like to talk to those idiots. The same poll found that the Democratic advantage in the generic ballot at only plus 2 points. The latest Reuters poll has Republicans almost up by 6 points. As recently as March, Democrats held a 9-point lead on this question, which is seen as an indicator of enthusiasm for the two parties going into the elections in November. Next November. Trump's approval numbers have also been eking out steady gains. Naturally, this spate of good news has garnered little attention in the press, which remains fixated on the disproven Russia scandal and now more broadly on Ukraine and bringing down the Trump administration. So, does Trump deserve credit for the upturn in the economy? Think about this part. President Obama raised taxes, imposed massive new regulations and mandates, routinely berated the private sector, and the economy responded with the worst economic recovery in modern times. Trump took office, and he and the Republican-controlled Congress went in the exact opposite direction, with sweeping tax cuts, significant deregulation, and since then, we've seen growth, income, and optimism all moving upward. Given that, how can anybody say that Trump doesn't deserve the credit for our current economy? Now, this is not all, okay? This is not all. The work week last week ended with some good news for the president as well. More good news, as more records were smashed. For the 22nd time since Donald Trump took office, the number of employed Americans reached a record high last month, climbing 319,000 from August's record 157,878,000 to 158,269,000. At the same time, the number of unemployed Americans set a Trump-era low at 5,769,000. those two strong numbers pushed the nation's unemployment rate to 3.5%, down 0.2 of a point from last month, and the lowest rate this country has seen since December of 1969. Now, we know that President Trump took the good news and ran with it on Twitter. And look, he does that. I don't necessarily always like it. But when you have a media that refuses to report, I understand it. Let's just say that. I don't like his style on Twitter. He could just do what he needs to do and quit trying to pick fights. But I get it. I do. I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. Okay. The Labor Department's Bureau of Labor Statistics said the economy added 136,000 jobs in September as employment in healthcare and in professional and business services continued to trend up. Employment in government also continued its upward trend in September with 22,000 jobs added. On a negative note, manufacturing employment dropped 2,000 jobs. Now, in September, the civilian non-institutional population in the United States was 259,638,000. That included all people 16 and older who did not live in an institution such as a prison, nursing home, or long-term care hospital. Of that civilian non-institutional population, 164,039,000 were in the labor force, meaning that they either had a job or were actively seeking one during the last month. That produced a labor force participation rate of 63.2%, the same as it was in August, and a Trump-era high. The higher this number, the better. Of the 164,039,000 who were in the labor force, 5,769,000 were unemployed, which put the unemployment rate at a 50-year low of 3.5%. The unemployment rate for Hispanics, 3.9% in September, has never, ever been that low. The unemployment rate for blacks remained at a record low of 5.5%. Among the other major worker groups, the unemployment rate for whites declined to 3.2%. For adult men, the jobless rate was the same, 3.2%. For adult women, 3.1%. Teenagers, 12.5%. And Asians, 2.5%. The change in total non-farm payroll employment for July was revised up by 7,000. Up, not down. Remember how they always revised Obama's down, and we'd find out about it 3 weeks later on page 10 in the, you know, section D of the New York Times, down at the very bottom of the page in four-point fonts? Yeah. Up 7,000. In September, hourly earnings for all employees on private non-farm payrolls dropped 1 penny to $28.09 per hour, following an 11-cent rise in August. Over the last 12 months, average hourly earnings have increased by 2.9%. So, let's stop here for a minute, because that's a lot of good news to take in as far as our economy being strong and robust. And, you know, you hear all this stuff from the left about, oh, well, there could be a recession looming. Well, there's nothing to indicate that. Nothing to indicate that right now. What does concern me, though, is that we just ended a fiscal year with a $938 billion deficit. That cannot continue. And I don't like hearing from the White House, we're not worried about that, the economy will take care of that. If the economy was going to take care of that, it would be taking care of it. Okay, here's my problem. The left is screaming that Trump gave tax breaks to the rich. Well, let's talk about tax breaks to the rich, because the federal government this past fiscal year had an increase in revenues, that's our tax dollars, of 4%. So the tax cuts actually got the government 4% more than it did the previous year. Think about that. The problem is that the government spent 7% more. So the problem is not the tax cuts. The problem is what they spend the tax money on. Now, I would really, really love to see somebody do something about debt and deficit spending. You have to understand, just in our debt service, we spend $358 billion a year. That's just the interest. That's debt service. That $358 billion gets us nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's just a matter of time before our creditors knock on the door and say, the bill's due. What the hell are you going to do then? You're talking about if it were to happen tomorrow. Okay, I want you to think about this. If our creditors, and the two biggest ones in the world are Japan and China, they're the two that we owe the most money to. Those are the big ones. If they knocked on the door and said the bill is due tomorrow, in order to pay them off, okay, I want you to think about this. In order to pay them off, we would have to slash our federal budget by 65% for 7 years. Do you think that if that happened, that we would be able to put people in houses for free? Do you think that we would be able to feed people for free? Do you think that we would be able to have them have cell phones for free? Do you think we'd be able to hand out condoms and flu shots and you know, whatever else the hell you can get at the health department for free? It sucks to think about having to cut what some people consider legitimate services. Okay? We can argue all day long what is and what isn't a legitimate service of government. People can raise points and raise hell and whatever the hell else they want. But the fact is that none of it matters, because if we have to cut our budget by 65%, our country would be in death spiral. I mean, death spiral. Crime would increase because there would be hungry people trying to steal food, trying to steal money. You know, it just, we've got to step up. It's no politician wants to be the one to do it. That's why the can's been kicked down the road for the last 40 years. It's time, though. It's time that it got done. And if, look, I'm not saying that every single one is a problem, but if if the boomer politicians that are running DC right now don't want to pull the trigger and get this done, make way for some Gen Xers that do. Can we get it all done in our lifetime? Probably not, but we can actually make a good start and actually have and actually leave a country that's financially stronger. I mean, let's think about it, though. What we're asking is for Congress to step forward and basically run our country within its means. Do you realize that over 22% of the 535 members of Congress have written bad checks out of their own personal accounts? Some have even had warrants sworn against them for multiple bad checks. It's ridiculous. All right, that's enough of that crap. We got to move on. We got way too much to talk about tonight. The United States Department of Justice issued a release on September 24th about a Mexican citizen it described as a twice deported felon who got into a verbal altercation with his wife and drove off at a high rate of speed and crashed into a ditch. When they got him and took him to the hospital, his blood alcohol limit, or his blood alcohol level, was three times the legal limit at 0.24. Yeah, 0.24. The full release reads, Joel Sanchez Lopez, age 33, of Fort Wayne, Indiana, was sentenced before United States District Judge Holly Brady for illegal reentry of a removed alien. Lopez was sentenced to 15 months in prison and will be deported upon his completion of his federal sentence. According to the documents in this case, Lopez is a citizen of Mexico. In 2008, he was charged and sentenced for felony domestic battery. In 2009, he was found operating a vehicle while intoxicated at three times the legal limit again. While on probation supervision for the felony domestic battery offense, he was deported back to Mexico for violating. However, he returned to the United States in 2014 without legal authorization and in violation of the 2010 deportation order. In 2017, he was charged with another domestic battery offense, which was later dismissed, and he was again deported to Mexico in November of 2017. Sometime in July of 2018, Lopez returned to the U.S. again without legal authorization and in violation of two deportation orders. He was found to be illegally present in the U.S. after he was charged in December of 2018 with operating a vehicle while intoxicated, again, three times the legal limit. That's his magic number. Dude knows how to hit it, doesn't he? 0.24 on both. This case was investigated by the Department of Homeland Security, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement Agency, and the case was handled by United States Attorney Sarah Noakes. Now, these same people that investigated this case, the Department of Homeland Security, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, these are the same agencies that the Democrats want to abolish. Along with borders, you know, so we don't want borders. We don't want anyone to enforce the borders. And then we don't want anybody checking up on who's supposed to be in the country and who's not supposed to be in the country. Does anybody have a problem with that besides me? Really? I mean, isn't the job of the United States government to provide for the common defense and security of the citizenry? That's like a basic tenet. And yet they want to abolish everything that does that. You know, that's the left for you. All right. Bottom of the hour, folks. It's time to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk a little Ukraine. And then we'll see what else happens after that. Do yourself a favor and stay tuned and listen to the good music.
Listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans, America's largest mortgage lender. Spring will be here soon, so if buying a new home is on your to-do list, right now is the time to call Quicken Loans. Learn about which mortgage options make sense for you and get a jump on your competition. With our exclusive Rate Shield approval, the low rate you lock today is protected for up to 90 days while you shop for your new home. With a Rate Shield approval, if rates go up, your low rate stays locked. But if rates go down, you get that new, even lower rate. Either way, you win. Talk to us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com to take advantage. Here's another great reason to work with us. For a record 9 years in a row, J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in the nation in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. Again, to lock in today's low mortgage interest rate and get the security of our exclusive Rate Shield approval, call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rate Shield approval only valid on certain 30-year fixed rate loans. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
Hi, welcome to this Subway ad for the new Sesame Ginger Glazed Chicken Signature Wrap. How would you like it?
I'll take a...
Sports announcer at home?
Yeah, how'd you...
We just know.
My wife picks up the new Signature Wrap. It's got double the rotisserie-style chicken mixed with a sesame ginger glaze. She appears annoyed at me, but she shrugs it off. Those sweet and savory flavors are calling her name. She lifts the wrap and... She takes the bite! Incredible! And now she's closing the door on my... Subway, make it what you want.
Limited time only at participating restaurants. Double meat basement, average 6-inch sub.
I'm Little Teapot, short and stout.
Here is my handle and here is my spout.
No, Dad, like this. When I get all steamed up, then I shout, tip me over and
tip all me out.
This is WWE superstar Roman Reigns. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today.
Visit fatherhood.gov, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
KLRN Radio has advertising rates available. We have rates to fit almost any budget. Contact us at advertising@klrnradio.com.
AG,
yo.
Just putting you on notice, I rotate bumpers a lot on my Monday show. These may get jacked from time to time, just so you know.
Hey, bro, you go right ahead. I'm telling you, it's the best music ever. It takes a lot to get me actually starting to dance in the chair, and that's what I do when the music bumpers hit, so it's all good. So, look, programming reminder. Mystery Couch with the red wine coming up at the top of the hour. And then you get Rick and Leslie instead of Rick and Dan. And then you get Rick to cap your night off. That's why we call it the Nightcap Show. So anyway, do yourself a favor. Stay tuned. It's all right here on KLRN Radio every Wednesday night. So, Ukraine. Ukraine. Somebody is missing a valuable marketing opportunity in this country to open a heavy equipment business and call it Ukraine and rent them out. I know, I'm dumb. It's okay.
Actually, so Ukrainian hang on. Hang on. Before you go any further, hang on. Before you go any further, that's actually a brilliant idea. And then they should do parody commercials about offering former vice presidents kids jobs. Just saying.
Yes. Yes. See, I just did that off the cuff, and here we go. We're already spitballing it. We need to get this thing copyrighted.
Actually, we need to talk to Ben and Brad, because those would make some good parody commercials.
Hey, I'm in. Yeah, we'll definitely capitalize on that a little later. So, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Saturday again denied having been put under pressure by President Donald Trump during the July phone conversation to investigate Joe Biden or his son's business dealings in Ukraine, an allegation at the center of the Democratic impeachment inquiry. And it is only an inquiry. It is not a hearing like some of the mental defects on Twitter keep spouting about. In what was billed as his first major interview by non-Ukrainian media since the whole thing erupted, Zelensky was quoted as telling Japan's Kyoto news agency that neither his invitation to the White House nor the sale of anti-tank missiles to Ukraine were made conditional on his willingness to cooperate in the Biden matter. He says, "I was never pressured and there were no conditions being imposed." Now, Zelensky said he had no discussions with Kurt Volker, the former U.S. special envoy for Ukraine, about investigations into Biden as a condition for being invited to visit Washington. Neither would he have accepted such a condition, he said. According to a memo on the July 25th phone call released by the White House last month after Trump raised concerns about the Biden issues, Zelensky told him that Ukraine's new prosecutor general will look into the situation. Zelensky told Kyoto News he was merely stating that if the U.S. investigators want help on the matter and take the necessary steps, then Ukraine could oblige by setting up a joint investigative committee. He pointed out that under Ukraine's constitution, the country's president does not have the power to compel the prosecutor general or investigative authorities to look into a particular case. Zelensky said he told Trump that if the U.S. prosecutors asked for cooperation in an investigation based on international law, then in line with Ukraine's domestic laws, it could set up a joint investigative committee to probe the issue at hand. In 2014, Vice President Biden's son Hunter joined the board of Ukraine's largest independent gas producer, Burisma Holdings, whose owner, an oligarch and former government minister named Mykola Zlochevsky, was under suspicion of corrupt practices. At a time of escalating tensions with Russia over its military intervention in Ukraine, President Obama had given his vice president the task of overseeing U.S.-Ukraine relations. In the course of his dealings with Ukraine, he visited the country 6 times as vice president. Biden, in 2016, threatened to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees for Kyiv unless then-President Petro Poroshenko fired his prosecutor general, Viktor Shokin. Shokin, who was widely viewed as quote-unquote ineffective in combating endemic corruption in Ukraine, was soon thereafter removed from his post. But the fact that he had been in the process of investigating Burisma's oligarch owner, Zlochevsky, prompted suspicion in some quarters that Biden's threat to withhold the loan guarantees had been improper. Do you think? If Zlochevsky gets in trouble, what happens to Burisma, and then what happens to Hunter's anywhere between $50,000 and $130,000 per month that he was receiving from this board position that he was uniquely unqualified to have to begin with. So armed with a complaint by an anonymous whistleblower, Trump's Democratic critics are accusing him of abusing his power as president to pressure Zelensky to provide damaging information on Biden, who is campaigning for the party's 2020 presidential nomination. Now, this whistleblower also had a working professional relationship with one of the three primary Democrat contenders for 2020. We don't know exactly which one just yet. Maybe somebody does know and we're not hearing it yet. I don't know. But I've heard that it's one of the three top contenders. So the claim that his decision to hold up military aid for Ukraine that Congress had appropriated was part of this supposed pressure. Now, Trump denies that he withheld the aid because of concerns of corruption in Ukraine. Ukraine denies that Trump pressured them into doing this so that they could receive the aid that was already appropriated. How much more? I mean, what has to happen? You have a transcript of the phone call. You have testimony from the two participants in the phone call. What more needs to come out? I don't know. It's just crazy. And by the way, earlier this year in April, Hunter Biden stood down from the Burisma board. So that was, five years of, let's just average it out and say he got $80,000 a month. That would be $4 million for sitting on this company's board that produces energy of which he knows absolutely nothing about. Interesting. Okay, moving on. Time's getting short. We got to press. Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren's plan to crack down on the private equity industry would place stringent regulations on a source of funds that actually helped enrich her as a law professor at Harvard. Her plan, which would heavily tax and regulate private equity firms to stop what Warren has called Wall Street's legalized looting, could also end up hurting her former Harvard colleagues and Massachusetts retirees. The Harvard Endowment and the Massachusetts State Pension System invest a considerable portion of their portfolios in private equity, an asset class with the highest return of all investment types for both funds. Harvard used these returns to pay the six-figure salaries of Warren and her husband, which were fraudulently obtained under her claim of being Native American. Meanwhile, Massachusetts, the senator's home base, leaned on private equity yields to buoy its struggling pension fund, which covers 300,000 state employees, teachers, and retirees. Those holdings could soon be threatened by the Democratic presidential contender's plan to overhaul the industry. The benefactors of private equity are diverse. There are people that are invested in these funds through their pensions or large endowments at schools across the country. And they're funding tuition for students that otherwise couldn't afford to go to these institutions. Private equity is an investment class composed of funds and investors that buy out struggling companies and enact drastic turnaround measures to shore up the firm's bottom line. This is a lot of what Mitt Romney used to do. While Warren acknowledged that some companies emerge better off as a result of private equity, she has pledged to heavily tax and regulate private equity to stop what she calls the legalized looting. Sometimes companies do well, but far too often private equity firms are like vampires, she says, bleeding the company dry and walking away enriched even as the company succumbs. Harvard welcomed Warren as the new Leo Gottlieb Professor of Law in 1995, an endowed professorship established by a donation. She remained in that position full-time until her election as Massachusetts Senator in 2011, earning $430,000 in the last 2 years of her time at Harvard. Now, her husband, Professor Bruce Mann, continues to occupy an endowed seat in Harvard Law School. The salaries of endowed professors are paid in part by investing donor dollars in the university's $38 billion endowment. Investment gains fund one-third of the university's operational revenue. Private equity played a significant role in securing returns for Harvard's endowment and paying the salary of Warren and her colleagues, including her husband. It is the third largest asset class in the university's portfolio and represents about 17% of all money invested, according to the endowment's latest disclosure. Now, the Harvard endowment's private equity holdings have provided critical buoyancy to the struggling fund, which placed second to last in rate return compared to other Ivy League institutions. Private equity ranked in the highest return rate of all asset classes, 21%. 21% is good return these days. Let me tell you something. Not even going to lie. That's tough. I'd like to get in on some of that. While shares in publicly traded companies placed a distant second place at 14% returns average. Now, the endowment's gain was primarily driven by private equity and public equity exposures. Some of those gains have returned to Warren since she launched her political career. Harvard employees are the third largest donors to the senator's political efforts, collectively donating $70,000 since 2015. Private equity has provided financial benefits to Warren's constituents beyond Cambridge. The Massachusetts public pension system earns a disproportionately large part of its return from such investments, which comprises about 10% of the fund's portfolio. Their pension reserves investment management, which serves roughly 300,000 people in the state and municipal employees, teachers, and retirees, has been struggling for some time, failing to reach its benchmark rate in 2018. The fund's underperformance has contributed to the state's skyrocketing unfunded pension liability that has increased from $13 to $40 billion between 2003 and 2017, a 190% increase. And that's according to the Pioneer Institute. That's not the Pioneer Fund. Pioneer Fund is for investing. Pioneer Institute is a Boston-based think tank. So, you know, Warren is ready to basically cut her own throat to get done whatever she thinks needs to be done. I guess she figures she's made enough money and everybody else to hell with you. You know, you're not deserving of what she was deserving of. Well, let's see. We got some good news. Want some good news? This is a great story. And I had I saw it starting to circulate on Twitter yesterday. I had written this up into the notes for tonight's show on Monday, and yesterday it started going around. A drone help rescue a miracle dog trapped under buildings in the Bahamas 1 month after Hurricane Dorian devastated the islands. Big Dog Ranch Rescue, located in Loxahatchee Groves in Palm Beach County, Florida, is using technology and special recovery teams to locate and save dogs trapped under debris in Marsh Harbor after Hurricane Dorian. One recent rescue is a dog found trapped under an air conditioner and building debris who was rushed to the ranch to receive life-saving medical treatment and nourishment. And this is an incredible story. And these people, I mean, Big Dog Ranch Rescue, if you've never heard of them, look them up. They do some incredible work. I'm a big dog person. I'm also a big cat person. You know, you don't like it, too bad. It's my thing. And it just, these people do some incredible, incredible work. And they're using this technology with their recovery teams to help locate animals. In this particular case, the drone played a huge role. The dog is alive but emaciated and is making progress. They named him Miracle. Why not? 1 month trapped under an air conditioner and building debris and still alive? That is a miracle. This is the 138th dog saved by Big Dog Ranch Rescue in the Bahamas since it arrived on scene after the storm. And it is working with the Humane Society in the Bahamas to clear shelter space so new dogs can be placed there. Now, Miracle arrived at the ranch last Friday, and Big Dog Ranch says it will continue to transport dogs from the facility and will continue to provide vital life-saving supplies to the Bahamas. If you would like to help this most worthy and fantastic organization or to adopt from them, you can go to bdrr.org. That's Big Dog Ranch Rescue.org, bdrr.org, for more information. I could not think of a better cause for somebody looking for a pet than to help these people. Now, more stuff, because we got a couple more minutes. We can do this. What do we have? Wow, we got a big story that's left. I don't know if we can squeeze it all in, but let's go. Bernie Sanders' recent heart attack and hospitalization are bringing to the forefront an issue the Democratic Party's three leading presidential candidates have been trying to avoid like the plague: their age. At 78, the Vermont senator is the oldest in the party's field. Vice President Joe Biden nipping at his heels at a spry 76 years old, and Senator Elizabeth Warren cashing in at the spring chicken age of 70. All three, who have consistently occupied the trio of top slots in the public polls for the Democratic contest, are much older than the median age of about 55 years for a U.S. president at inauguration. Now, they are competing to face an incumbent 73-year-old Donald Trump. The candidates' ages, which have bubbled up as an issue for some throughout the primary, is now the source of renewed concern, according to interviews with strategists. Democratic county chairs in early states and voters in Iowa, which host the nation's first nominating contest. It factors into the discussions that people have locally, said Peter Leo, chairman of the Carroll County Democrats in Iowa. I don't know if anyone's number one concern is age, but there is definitely some trepidation, he says, especially following a heart attack. Now, during the campaign event, Sanders complained again about chest pain, which the doctors have now said was a heart attack, and he had two stents inserted the following Wednesday. He was discharged from the hospital 2 days later, but the timing of his return to the campaign trail remains unclear. The Sanders campaign has said it will participate in the next debate, which is October 15th. Carol Williams, a 59-year-old retiree from Ames, Iowa, said the discussion over age she is having with other undecided Democrats resolved around the need for change. Well, here's the biggest need for change. Let's talk about this. The Democrats have chastised Republicans over and over and over again of being the party of rich white people, old rich white people. Who are they running? Old, rich, white people. Interesting. Interesting. If I were a Republican, I would just beat them over the head for the hypocrisy of it. I would just call them hypocrites all the time, because that's what they are anyway. Trump, meanwhile, was the oldest president at a first inauguration, roughly a year older than Ronald Reagan was when he took office, but has already been taking age-based shots at least one potential foe, and that would be Biden. He says Biden's having a hard time. There's no question about it. He told reporters last month in response to former President Jimmy Carter saying he wouldn't be able to handle the presidency if he had to be in office at age 80. Mr. Sanders, too, responded to Carter's comments on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert a week before his heart attack. He said, "I think you have to look at the totality of the candidate. I'm in good health running a vigorous campaign." Yeah, how are we talking about that now, Bernie? Now, all three candidates have tried to counter any doubts about their age by showing voters their energy and stamina on the campaign trail. They've also promised to disclose their medical records before the Iowa caucuses. I think the challenge of an older candidate, someone in their mid-70s, is to demonstrate that they have the vigor and wherewithal to be able to do the very difficult job of being president. And I agree. And Joe Biden definitely has shown that he doesn't have the wherewithal. He might have some energy, but he has no wherewithal. All right, well, I was afraid of this. We're running out of time. We're not going to be able to get through all of it. But know that it's just a bunch of Democrats screaming, "We're not too old, we're not too old." And, Trump is, basically. So anyway, that's tonight's show. If you like it, tell your friends. If your friends like it, you need new ones. But they and you are welcome here with me every Wednesday night on KLRN Radio for the Conservative Curmudgeon Show. I'm your host, The Grouch. Peace.
One of these days, I'm going to learn where that slider goes so you can talk over it. Oops.
One, two, what you doing?
I swear it makes sense in my head, then I hit the button and I realize it's not in the right place.
I hate this place. Nothing works here. The medications don't work. I've been here for 7 years.
Here's to us.